Beyond Brunel, exploring the future of infrastructure. From ICE Southwest and the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership.
Welcome to Beyond Brunel. Hello, I'm Claire Gibson, and I'm really pleased to be joining Beyond Brunel as one of your new presenters.
And I'm Katie Toms, also new to the presenting team and very excited to get started.
We're coming to these conversations from two different angles,
which we hope will mean a richer discussion in every episode.
My background is planning and economic development. I'm a director at CRG Consultants, and my focus is strategic and long-term.
And I'm very much on the civil engineering and delivery side, how things actually get built. I work for WSP as the regional delivery lead in defence and security for the south of England.
So we're your new presenting team for what's set to be a great series with plenty of thought-provoking conversations ahead.
All grounded in infrastructure challenges and opportunities across the southwest. So, let's get started.
Today we're talking about defence infrastructure, a huge part of life and work here in the southwest. From naval bases to aerospace and training facilities, this region plays a central role in supporting the UK's defence capability.
And the demands on that infrastructure are changing. The Ministry of Defence is modernising its estate to support new technologies, upgraded fleets and more resilient facilities. So today we're exploring what this transformation means for the region.
We're joined by two great guests, Natalie Parnell, Infrastructure and Investment Planning Director at Babcock International Group, and Alexis Field, Infrastructure Programme Director at the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, part of the MOD.
Natalie, Alexis, welcome to Beyond Brunel.
Thank you.
So let's kick off with the first question. When we talk about defence infrastructure, what do we actually mean? Should we think about the defence sector as part of the wider infrastructure system? In fact, do we? Alexis, maybe you could make a start.
It's an interesting question because the reality of defence infrastructure itself is it's often behind a wire and there's a huge amount of it. The challenge with connecting with wider society, of course, is that actually we use the supply chain. People that work outside of the wire come inside the wire to work. So the infrastructure itself, maybe not so much, but the necessity and the need to modernise is absolutely connected to everywhere around it, particularly across the southwest.
That's great. Thank you. And Natalie, from your perspective, what do you see defence infrastructure as being?
I'll just support Alexis' comment about it's normally behind a wall. One of the challenges we've had actually is how do you lower that wall safely without impacting security? And thinking about it much more as a system of systems. So working with multi-agency responses, we might work with companies that run National Grid, for example, about how we actually create an interconnected infrastructure that is secure and resilient. But most of the work I do is actually, as described, behind a wall and about how we build that estate up to address whatever defence needs are at a time.
So, Natalie, we're in a period of rapid change in defence at the moment. How do you think the region's defence infrastructure is evolving to meet these new and emerging security needs?
Yeah, I mean, you've touched on it. It's a really volatile world we're in at the moment, and defence infrastructure is absolutely changing to shift to that. And it's much more about readiness at pace than it ever has been in the past. If you look back through previous defence reviews, there was a rationalisation, there was cost saving. In the last decade, it's been much more about how we shift the way defence estates operate to give that flexibility and, as I say, readiness at pace. So if I think about the sites I'm involved with, that means we're thinking about different design techniques and how we might shorten construction timelines, for example, to get ready quicker. But it also means we're looking at modularisation of the estate. So how do you make it more adaptable going forward? Because the one thing that is certain is defence needs are going to continue to change. And they're changing at a pace now that is probably more prevalent than it ever has been with the inject of technology and the changing warfare, the way that warfare is fought. So adapting the estate to support that is an ever-evolving piece. And as I say, modularisation and readiness is key in that.
Just to add on that, I think what's particularly important at a time when you're in a global political situation, which is quite uncertain, it's all about people. there's boats and shiny things and all of that stuff, but it's really about people. So there's a huge amount of focus within the Ministry of Defence at the moment about what infrastructure have we got in place to support the soldiers and the sailors and the airmen and women that will go off to war as well. So we're doing a huge amount of work around accommodation and ensuring that they're supported, where we're using modular construction all of the time now, and we're getting more and more efficient at it all of the time, so bringing the costs down associated with that, making sure that the place where these people work and train is far more effective. It means that they're more engaged in their work, so retention improves, all of that type of thing. So it's not just about the security of the infrastructure itself, it's about the security of the people that we're taking care of.
So Natalie, from an industry perspective, what is driving the major wave of defence infrastructure upgrades that we're seeing across the country at the moment?
I've probably touched on it in terms of that change in defence posture, but also the change in the investment profiles and the need to shift to a different way of working. On the Devonport site in particular, we're seeing huge investment on upgrading the facilities for change of class of vessels, for example. As the Royal Navy brings in their new fleet, the infrastructure and the facilities that support that need to look slightly different than they did in the past, and how we might do repair and overhaul to that fleet is also changing, because there's some things that will never change. So some of the people and the way that we do production work isn't changing, but the way that we use tools or technology to support that is changing, and therefore the connected infrastructure to those vessels when they're in port or in a dockyard having an overhaul looks very different on the new classes of vessels than it did on the old classes of vessels. So that drive to upgrade the estate to meet that demand is more prevalent than ever as that class of vessel changes.
And Alexis, how is the Defence Infrastructure Organisation shaping that long-term infrastructure strategy that we need to support modern capability?
There's a huge amount of work going on. So if you have a good read of the Strategic Defence Review that came out last year, it talks a lot about what's the capability required of defence in the UK going forward. There's a whole section on infrastructure. So if you're really keen, go and have a read of it. And of course, defence infrastructure's role in all of that is really as an enabler to all of the capability that is required. So we support a lot of the frontline commands to help them to adapt their capital programmes to enable those capabilities to come through. And that can be very wide ranging. So it could be new docks, as we've got in Devonport. It could be the refurbishment of airfields. It could be new and better utilities. It could be particular workshops for particular types of capability. But again, it's also about supporting the people. So better accommodation, better lived experience for those people that live on and around the defence estates that we've got. So there's a lot of shaping going on, and that continues to happen on a very regular basis. So I think we've become far more adaptable over recent months and years with learning that has been taking place, and ensuring that we're adaptable moving forward. So this is not about building really grand buildings. It's about having workspaces that can be adapted to different capability as it comes through and as it changes going forward.
And just back to an earlier question, is that long-term strategy linking in with the wider regional, national infrastructure strategies? Are you trying to break through that wire that you mentioned earlier?
It's really tough because we're trying to sort out what's behind the wire first. We know very well in Devonport there's been a bit of a lack of investment in infrastructure outside of the wire, and particularly inside of it. So there are a lot of opportunities to work further outside of what's beyond the walls and the wires, as we refer to it. I think there's a lot of opportunity in that space to do more.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing that growing. Just to support that, is things like the Defence Industrial Strategy highlighted five regions that were focused in terms of that defence growth. And Plymouth, actually, in part of the South West, is one of those areas that's been picked up for that. So things like the creation of Team Plymouth, which is a joint collaboration between a Ministry of Defence, Plymouth City Council and Babcock, is all about how we connect defence into that wider strategic piece. So Team Plymouth is looking at transport, it's looking at housing, it's looking at how we shape and build the local economy wider than Plymouth into the southwest, and then how does defence play its part in that economic development of the region. So it's absolutely starting to grow those green shoots of interconnectivity. It just needs, I think, that building up on it and further support in terms of maturing it, I guess, from where we are today.
there's no getting away, really, that we've got an ageing infrastructure. And it's one of the big challenges for the defence sector. And we've touched on it a bit already, but if we could just go through some more of the biggest challenges of modernising whilst also meeting today's expectations of innovation, sustainability and efficiency. I don't know if, Natalie, is anything you want to touch on?
Yeah, I'll start with that one. So it's really challenging. I'll go with that because it's not like we can turn things off. So the demand for today for the current estate is a still extant demand. So we've still got to service today's operations whilst we try and upgrade the estate. It feels a bit like sometimes someone said to me, trying to replace the tyres on a car whilst it's still moving.
Yeah.
So we're trying to work around how do you continue to keep live operations at the forefront whilst thinking about how you plan projects and upgrades, either into small outages or alongside that, which changes the way you think about construction. Mm. Because actually you can't just put a fence around it and say, well, we'll come back in a year's time and you'll have a new shiny thing. So it has to be about how you're elongating almost some of those projects around the live operations, but delivering scope that delivers the right value at the right point in time. So one of the things we look at really heavily is integrated planning in that space. Mm-hmm. So integrating the upgrades with operations continually. And then we've got a legacy estate. So that's got aging materials, old infrastructure. So many of the defence sites are hundreds of years old, mm-hmm. some of them, and some of them are listed. So some of the buildings on the site we're looking at are listed, and we're running modern manufacturing inside old listed buildings and trying to bring those buildings into something that is suitable for now and the future while still honouring the history and the historic value that that brings is a real balance to find. And then for defence in general, there's an investment plan that has to be about delivering value for the public purse too. So trying to balance all of those things, upgrading old estates is expensive. Sometimes it's easier to knock it down and rebuild. Mm. So it's just being in the space of actually what are the right options for every project and thinking that through.
It's absolutely true. I mean, if you look at the cost of some of the stuff that we're delivering in defence, it would be cheaper, you know, in a town centre because we're having to deal with so much failed infrastructure, both below ground and above it, which makes it particularly challenging. There is recognition of that, which is positive, but nevertheless, we're having to deal with it all of the time. So, you know, we're currently doing projects at the moment that are dealing with listed walls where we just need to get a repair in really, really quick. And we want to put up SLA really quickly in a modular construction fashion. But what's underground is numerous utilities over decades and decades and decades. Mm. And quite frankly, we don't know what's in there. So it's a huge challenge all of the time. And because pace is the key word for us at the moment, those obstacles continue to throw up challenges on a regular basis. And that becomes really tough on those teams because it's pace, 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 pace. But meanwhile, challenge, 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 challenge. So it makes it really difficult for the people involved in the delivery of those things, as well as then keeping to the sort of value for money proposition that we're also trying to do at the moment. So you've got all of these things swirling around at all times. I think there's some opportunities to get after some of that, but it's about changing our mindset so that we're dealing with some of this aged infrastructure first, so that we're ready when we want to come along with the right capability, rather than identifying the capability and then working backwards, which is often one of the things that we have to manage as well.
Yeah. And the other dynamic is that the emerging threats like drones, cyber attacks, hybrid conflict are changing the demands on defence infrastructure. Alexis, how are these shifts influencing design and investment?
Not too much in terms of the design and investment, but we're being far more cautious about the partners that we work with. And the way that we deliver is a bit more tricky now. So we're having to keep our information as sensitive as we possibly can. We need to work with people that have got certain security clearances. Mm-hmm. They have to work on IT systems that have got the right security levels. So it's just another layer on top of what we're dealing with at the moment. So that makes it particularly challenging because here in the UK, we've got a lot of freedom of movement. You know, there's people from all over the world that work here, which is fantastic. But actually, we can't have that on certain sites. So it does limit the workforce that we can have working with us, which is a huge constraint at a time, again, where we need more innovation, more people coming in, bringing different sector experience. So it is a huge limitation at times. And it's more to do with the people and the security layer that has to go around the work that we're delivering.
Yeah, and Natalie, is that the same for you at Babcock?
Very much the same, and the skills agenda is a huge challenge in that space. But I'll just touch on the requirements that that change brings in terms of how we're thinking about developing the estate. So one of the things that was brought in through, I think it was an IT lens originally, is secure by design. Mm. And that's about getting those security requirements really in up front. And they're actually quite clear now in terms of, back in the olden days, it used to be, you know, fortification was the thing. And now it's about resilience and layers of security requirements. And that is including things like physical countermeasures. So in your point on drones, it might be actually it's no good having a wall anymore because they can fly over the top. So what are your frequency jammers or things that might come into measure that stops that potential attack front? So there's a number of requirements that get layered in early on in the development of those projects now, which are about exactly, as I said at the beginning, that secure by design.
Beyond Brunel, exploring the future of infrastructure. From ICE Southwest and the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership. Follow us on LinkedIn to join our growing community.
Something a little bit different. Climate resilience is surely another major priority, especially around the southwest. How are you building resilient infrastructure, particularly at our more coastal and maritime sites?
Yeah, so we've got a few sites that are right up against the water, essentially. So obviously Devonport and Portsmouth are the most obvious ones. It's, again, a massive challenge because when you look at design in terms of let's go and fix that seawall, you've already got the listing on it, you can only have certain people working on it, and then that's expensive, and then you've got to think about, well, what about 100 years time? So it's tricky, and to be honest with you, we're trying to find a balance because there's absolutely no way that we can protect against climate change. If you look at the way that the Environment Agency approach it, we cannot get to that space because of the way that we have to interface with operations. So it's always about balance. So what we tend to do is look into and work with our supply chain partners, what would be the optimum solution here? It's not about perfect, it's not about worst case, it's about optimum solutions and how we can weave that in. Across quite a lot of our estate, we are trying to ensure that our buildings and infrastructure that we construct are as close to carbon net zero as we possibly can make them. So a lot of our SLA, single living accommodation buildings, include solar panels and grey water systems and air source heat pumps and all of that stuff. So whatever we can do to limit our impact, we're doing. But we're not looking for perfect, we're looking for optimum solutions. Again, just with that layer of operations come first. Value for money is important, pace is important. That's of course important, but it's all about striking that perfect balance.
It's always a compromise.
And building on that, there's things that we're doing around, and you mentioned it, like coastal front is like infrastructure hardening, I'd call it, which is where we're looking at response to that flood risk potential. Is how are we building up sea walls or flood walls on docks and various other things to help to combat some of that? So some of the things we can do are physical infrastructure upgrades that might help that. And then to your innovation point, there's looking at things like services highways that might elevate some of those services out of old Victorian subways into areas where they'd be more protected from some of those climate risks. So there's a range of things that we can look at in terms of how do we re-architect the way that defence site works to be able to combat some of that climate risk. But to your point entirely, it's a complete balance. There's an investment balance and a feasibility of how much you can actually put in place for some of those things.
We touched on this a little earlier, but how can closer collaboration between the defence sector, local authorities and industry unlock benefits from both national security and indeed regional growth? I mean, maybe Natalie, given everything that's going on in Plymouth, maybe you could help us understand that a bit more.
Yeah, sure. And I think, and I mentioned Team Plymouth earlier, and that's a really good example of a collaboration piece. But what that brings together is different mindsets and ethos from different groups or communities. So you can get a bit stuck in your ways, can't you, if you're working in a particular environment for a long time. And so bringing that collaboration together almost brings that best athlete principle to it. So where do you get the best ideas from? Who's best placed to start shaping and delivering some of those those policies or approaches, and it might not be the way that we've looked at it in the past. So working with a wider industry base or supply base, you allow that innovation to come through, notwithstanding your point around we've got to be very careful in defence around who you might bring into that collaboration and how you might share information. But you start to move away from a little bit of groupthink that can be embedded in organisational cultures when you start to create those collaborations and you start to challenge things and ideas get generated. And so when we're thinking about what we're trying to do for the Southwest in terms of growth, some of the ideas that have come out from there in terms of city centre housing, for example, odd that that would come from a collaboration with defence. But it's because there's a different viewpoint where you can bring in a different data set or a different information that might help inform it. So we were able to bring in information around the skills that we need in the region, and therefore recognising we don't have enough skills in the region, how do we start attracting that? That enabled a different conversation with our local authority. Mm. So that's where a collaboration really starts to make the difference. It just unlocks a conversation that might not have happened before.
Yeah. And Alexis, from your national perspective, are there good examples happening elsewhere in the country that we could be learning from on collaboration?
There's loads of fantastic examples. So we've been very clear in the Ministry of Defence that we want to have a different relationship with the supply chain going forward. So again, a great read would be the Defence Industrial Strategy, if you fancy stuff like that.
It's a second plug.
Yeah, they're good reads. So in those, we have got an absolute commitment to working with our suppliers more effectively. And actually, we've already got a number of things that we've changed, how we work with SMEs moving forward, having more alliance-based contracting with our supply chain, so not having to compete every single project. What that then enables us to do is have a more mature relationship with our supply chain, particularly around social value. So I think there's quite a lot of suppliers that have wanted to go big on social value for some time, but actually the commitment from the client side hasn't necessarily been there. That's what we're changing. Mm. So as with Team Plymouth, we're starting to do that for the Southwest as a region. So we're talking about, well, there's a few billion to be spent within Devonport, but actually across the Southwest, it's multi billions. Mm. How can we encourage more tier twos, tier threes to get on board with that? How can we change the narrative around social values? So it's not just something you put in your tenders, it's something we really, really mean. And how can we get after that as a collective? And I think that's where we'll see the real sea change when it comes to working with the local authorities. So we've got a similar thing within Portsmouth. Of course, it's a huge dockyard similar to Devonport. It employs a lot of people, a lot of investments required there as well. And if you look at the scale of work that we've got to deliver in infrastructure over the next 4, 5, 6, 10 years, it's absolutely enormous. Mm-hmm. So it's a great opportunity now to be upping your skills or coming in to work for the defence sector where you might not have done that before. Mm. So it's for us, I think, as the Ministry of Defence, to prove the magnet. We've got to be the magnet, encourage the suppliers to want to come and work in the Southwest, and then leverage those opportunities with the local authorities.
Yeah,
ties quite nicely really into my next question for you, which is really, at the moment, how well prepared do you think the Southwest region is to have our workforce keep pace with the evolution that's required?
I think we're on a bit of a, I'm going to use the word journey, we're on a bit of a journey in that space, because actually when you look at the growth agenda through defence, someone quoted to me the other day, I think it's 20,000 additional roles or jobs that we need to support that defence programme. And that is, to your point, as micro sites across the Southwest. We saw in the news recently around helicopter builds through an industry partner, which is securing jobs, and we're competing in that market. So back to the collaboration question is actually, how do you do it as a collective rather than competing? Because I think we've got a huge growth. And when I think about, I mentioned earlier about class transitions, and we're thinking about some of the new classes that are coming in. Well, they're a long time in inception to arrive. And one of my colleagues describes it as the people that will work on those vessels are either in junior school today or not born. Mm. So continuing to build that skills agenda in a really purposeful way. Mm. So, you know, with engagement in STEM, but also returners to the work environment. So people that may have been out of work for a while for various reasons, how do we bring them back in? And then changes of industry, to your point, how do we attract people to both defence and infrastructure that maybe might not have thought it was for them originally. Mm. And as a really small tactical example, we have a train to fit programme, which brings in people from all industries. So in my team, I have people that run their own beauty salon, for example, that are now project managing infrastructure projects. Mm. So there's a piece around that shift in training to actually build up that getting ready for what we need. Mm. It's really important. There's many avenues we need to explore on that, and it has to be really purposeful and driven, because otherwise we won't make it. We won't be ready.
I had heard from some in the defence sector that it was difficult for them to go to a school because there was a sense that we don't necessarily want the defence sector in selling mm-hmm. opportunities. That feels like it's changing now. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I think so. And I think some of that is about how the defence sector's branded itself in the past, and also the current global instability. I think people realise the real need for defence. It is about keeping us safe. It's not about creating a conflict. It's mm-hmm. about keeping our nation safe and securing us all. That's a really different lens to look at it from. The military provide humanitarian aid. They provide all sorts of things. It's not just a kind of war front, is it? That's the bit that you hope you never get to. And the reason you have deterrence is to try and not get to that. So it's completely shaping differently the way we think about defence that starts to attract people into the sector. I quite passionately feel it is about keeping us safe. That's what we're here for. And I'm being able to articulate that to others so that they feel the same is, I think, really important. But also about the opportunity. So you know, when I think about the changing technologies and the engineering skill sets that come into the sector, it's fascinating work for somebody that's skilled engineer. So to be able to get into that, I think it's just something about branding it and selling it in a different way. But I do feel like it's changing.
Natalie, maybe you could help us get excited about what's coming down the track. Looking ahead, what's particularly something we should be looking out for in the Southwest?
I think we've touched on quite a lot of it already. It's that huge opportunity in terms of the investment that is earmarked for the Southwest and what that means in terms of economic growth for the region, what that means in terms of jobs, what that means in terms of the type of things that people can get involved with. We're looking at things like marine autonomy, working with the University of Plymouth in that space. And they're really skills and things for the future that are very exciting. And just the role of this one point in our lives where I think there's a point of inflection or a point of change. And we are at that in terms of that reinvestment in some of the defence estate and how we might shape things for the future. And to be involved in that at this moment in time, I feel like I'm really privileged, actually, to be part of that.
Yeah, that's great. And Alexis, I guess that's a story that could be told around the country.
Very similar, yeah. I mean, across the Southwest, we've got billions of pounds worth of investment in infrastructure alone coming in, just in defence. And isn't that just fantastic for the Southwest? Mm-hmm. It means that people can drive their careers and stay where they're from, or perhaps where they've come to learn at university or at college or whatever. It means that families can grow here and have a wonderful lifestyle, as well as working on really fantastic and interesting projects. The level of investment in defence infrastructure is something that we've never really seen before, and I think that's something for us all to get excited about. As a civil engineer, I'm really excited about the breadth of work that's going on. It's everything from those accommodation blocks to really complex dock builds to anything else in between. And I'm particularly excited about the opportunities that it offers people. So even my 12-year-old wants to go into building stuff in defence, believe it or not, when he's a bit older, but also the proposition perhaps for people like veterans. So we've got a lot of defence personnel in this part of the world, particularly related to the Navy. Having opportunity for them come and do a job in the southwest of England is really exciting, as well as people that might be used to working in different sectors that might be downturning a little bit at the moment. But there's something else for them to go into. So I just think from a social value community perspective, it's a properly exciting time.
Natalie, Alexis, thanks so much. It's been a fascinating conversation, and looking at how defence infrastructure is evolving and what it means for the Southwest. So thanks for your time.
And thanks to everybody for listening. We hope you enjoyed the conversation.
Come back soon for more episodes as we continue exploring ideas and meeting people shaping the region's future.
Until next time, take care, and we'll see you again on Beyond Brunel.
You've been listening to Beyond Brunel from ICE Southwest and the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership. Follow us on LinkedIn for the latest updates. Beyond Brunel is presented by Claire Gibson and Katie Toms, a Fresh Air Studios production.